Retro Nerd.
Entering the hive of scum and villainy.
I love democracy.
We shall have order!
The old Senate will no longer be of any concern to us.
My allegiance is to the Republic, to democracy!
Rebellions are built on hope.
Your focus determines your reality.
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
Hello, and welcome to the Beltway Banthas podcast. I'm producer Riley Blanton, and today on the show, we have a very special episode. Host Stephen Kent interviews writer Tom Luongo, well, about what else? Star Wars, and most specifically, where the divide in Star Wars mirrors the culture war. It's a really fascinating conversation that originally appeared on Stephen's YouTube channel, so if you're not subscribed, make sure you go search for Stephen Kent on YouTube and subscribe. He's been putting out a lot of great content and interviews and discussion. It's a great conversation. I'm going to plug it right up here at the front. It's very closely related to a lot of the topics covered in Stephen's book, How the Force Can Fix the World, available right now for pre-order wherever you get books, so make sure you do that. But without further ado, here's Stephen and Tom.
All right, Stephen Kent here. I just want to start with saying that it is clear that the battles over The Last Jedi Episode 8 are not going away anytime soon. It has become more than a movie. This movie has become a symbol. Rian Johnson's contribution to the Star Wars universe is going to be one of those topics that we talk about in fandom forever. Sort of in the way that we do Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, as sort of a sign of generational warfare, political grievance, culture war, all wrapped up in sort of the illusion of talking about movies. Are we really talking about cuts? Are we really talking about whether or not it's boring or exciting or pacing? Are we really talking about lightsaber battles and whether or not they live up to what we imagined they would be as fans? Or are we talking about something much, much deeper? I saw a tweet, it was a couple of weeks ago. There's always a good tweet out there from Senate candidate J.D. Vance. He's running for the U.S. Senate in Ohio. And J.D. Vance, he wrote the book, Hillbilly Elegy, was a big time bestseller. He kind of entered the political arena first as sort of like a never Trumper guy. And then over the past couple of years, he's really sort of rebranded or reoriented himself as sort of a red pilled Appalachian conservative. And of course he weighs in on The Last Jedi because that's just what you do, right? There's something that you're saying by weighing in on The Last Jedi. It says something to people about where you stand. Not on Star Wars, not on cinematography or pacing or action, but on something much, much deeper. And I jumped in on this battle just like everybody else does when it comes to Star Wars culture war stuff. And then I came across an article by another guy. His name is Tom Luongo. I've got him here now joining the channel. Tom, you wrote a really good piece on your website, tomluongo.me, called Where the Divide in Star Wars Mirrors the Culture War. And it really spoke to me just right at the right time, just with all the stuff that we're always talking about in our culture today. Give me your thesis. How does Star Wars and the culture war perfectly reflect one another?
Well, good afternoon, Stephen. Good to be here and really enjoyed the we've been trying to get this thing together for a couple of weeks now. And it's just the schedules haven't allowed for that to happen. For me, like watching this play out, it's been very clear that there's a number of ways to look at this. But for me, it's very, very clear that The Last Jedi and really the sequel films in general were touched upon or pulled upon by a group of Star Wars fans that feel politically aggrieved. And it's as they're to hate this movie and to misunderstand it almost purposefully. I think what became a, as you pointed out in your opening, a kind of a call to battle, a casus belli. Many things about their own, about a lot of people's anxiety over the falling apart or the falling apart of the myth of America, the myth of American exceptionalism and all the things that we kind of believe about ourselves, have wrapped up in the, well, they've destroyed Star Wars too, right?
Yeah. So the myth of America, this is the idea of the American dream. This is the idea of everybody can succeed. Anybody can rise to the top. America is a land of opportunity. I think that is the founding myth of this country. Would you say that is the thing that is fading and being litigated by like the likes of J.D. Vance, who I just teed up in the introduction to this segment?
Sure.
We're sort of fighting with the ghost of America's founding on both sides now.
Well, I think it's that. It's also American exceptionalism. It's all this post-World War II America, the shining house on the hill. I think it all ties into the neo-libs on the left and the neocons on the right, all feeding into this idea that America as an empire is a good thing because we're the ones who are going to bring benighted enlightenment to the rest of the world, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is that so many people who of the previous, of my generation, your generation, and even now the younger generation, they see Star Wars as a rallying cry to, you know, that point of self-actualization. That's what Star Wars is as a story, right? That's what Luke's story is. That's what it's Anakin's story is, the fall into self-actualization on the other side. And then there's this weird thing that we have with the sequel films, right? But each generation's trilogy is a reflection of each generation's need of that time. And so the myth of America itself has fallen through various stages over the course of the last 45, 50 years.
I'm glad you mentioned like need, because Star Wars is a story that we need it to be certain things to us at certain times in our lives. There's the moment where we are Luke Skywalker, we're the kid looking out at the twin suns and dreaming of what's possible. There's the moment when we become Obi-Wan Kenobi and we need to do something incredibly selfless for someone younger than us, the next generation, someone who we're mentoring. Right. And I think one of my main concerns about the ongoing battles over the prequels, right? Because I was a prequel kid. That's my Star Wars. Episode 3 was like my Star Wars radicalizing moment.
Right.
And I'll always have a grudge against like Gen X and even like younger boomer fans who made loving Star Wars miserable for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I see them doing it now right back at kids today, because it's not their Star Wars. It's not saying to them what they need it to say right in this moment. And you talk a lot about like what people, I think young men, particularly like in the Star Wars fandom, feel at this moment is a sense of validation coming from the top that they're not getting, that they still matter, that they have purpose.
Right.
The Last Jedi didn't give it to them.
Well, The Last Jedi actually did give it to them, but it gave it to them in a way that they didn't want to hear. Right. That's the big thing about that. I also did a half an hour video podcast on this monologue on this, talking about the same thing in a little bit more detail than the article did. And I've been talking about this and screaming about this on my live stream for 4 years now, arguing with my younger Star Wars fans.
I
remember when I went into Episode 1, for example, I was not one of those Gen X or early boomers. I'm a high Gen X. I'm like 1968. I'm like the perfect Gen X guy. Right. But I went into Episode 1 saying, just, hey man, George Lucas hasn't directed a movie in 25 years. I just hope it doesn't suck. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be honest with you. And if it's half the movie for this generation of kids that Star Wars Episode 4 was for me when I was a kid, well, then it's a successful thing. And from what I've heard from so many people your age, that it was that. And they should have absolutely no shame in liking The Phantom Menace. I actually really like The Phantom Menace. It's a guilty pleasure. I know it's a bad movie from a technical perspective.
Shame on you.
But I still love it, right? I just, because there's an honesty and a purity to it that I really adore, right? And I mean that sincerely. I just go and I just put on my inner 9-year-old and go watch it and laugh at Jar Jar. And,
and there it is, putting on your inner 9-year-old. There's this battle that always goes on in, sure. in Star Wars fandom and the reviews of like, who's Star Wars for? And I think you always, I take different sides of the argument often. Like Star Wars is unequivocally for everybody. That's why it sells so well. That's why it makes so much money. Because if it was just a kid's show, then it wouldn't be a massive box office success. The Mandalorian wouldn't be running away with the kind of numbers that it has on Disney Plus. Star Wars is for four generations of people. But I think what you and I fundamentally agree on is that Star Wars is a story of passing the lightsaber down and doing so humbly and gratefully. Yeah. And what I see going wrong here in the discourse around The Last Jedi is one generation not wanting to pass that blade down and actually let kids kind of take up that mantle because their hero might have to take a knock or fall on his knees before he gets back up again and can project strength. Am I kind of reading your argument of that right? Because you take both sides of the argument.
I absolutely adore The Last Jedi. I think it's one of the beautiful Star Wars films made. I think it rivals The Empire Strikes Back as being.
What are your politics, Tom?
Oh, I'm hardcore libertarian.
Okay.
hardcore anarcho-capitalist libertarian. Like, you know, excellent. I'm sorry. Ron Paul's is too far to the right for me.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm hardcore anarcho-libertarian. But and so I read The Last Jedi. The first time when I watched it, I of course read it as a statement about nonviolence. And I saw it that way and I still see it that way. But I look at The Last Jedi as one of it's a divisive film because it when Luke walks on screen and wasn't the guy everybody thought he was going to be, once the veil was pierced and he threw the lightsaber over his shoulder, they just checked out and they stopped watching the movie. Because I talk to people all the time and they're like, well, what about this? I'm like, dude, have you watched the movie? Like I've seen The Last Jedi 12, 13 times, some innumerable number of times already. I put it on every once in a while just because it's great.
And people say Luke wouldn't do that.
Oh, that's absolutely not.
And again, it just goes straight to headcanon. And this is, I think this is where like libertarians and conservatives have our natural tension. I too am a libertarian 4 days out of every five. I guess that's not a full week. 6 days out of every seven. I am a libertarian. I always try to fill in that seventh. But part of what makes me a libertarian is I'm pretty standoffish against tradition and the sacred. I like the stripping down of certain sacred things to find new knowledge beneath things that maybe we are afraid to rip in half. And that J.D. Vance tweet that he put out there was expressing an anger that Yoda would ever call the Jedi text, you know, a bunch of old books, not exactly page turners. And people go, oh, the Jedi text. And that's where you get the conservative instinct. There's the conservative backlash against protecting the sacred and upholding certain traditions. And I guess I come to Star Wars as someone who never really like loved Luke. I loved Han Solo when I was a kid because he was kind of the irreverent guy. Right. And I guess that's why I've never felt like common cause with these sort of really up in arms defenders of what Luke would or would not be at age 70 or 60.
At age 66, right? It's like, I agree. It's funny. But at the same time, like Yoda's lived long enough to know that he has had 37 years to look on, 50 years to look on his failure. I mean, the part of the thing that the best part of the prequel films for me is actually Yoda's story, because Yoda's the one who has to go through and realize just how much he's failed by trying to keep everything ossified. Like the prequel films are a classic story of institutional failure because they've become blind. Right? This goes. I mean, you could do I watched a talk with Jordan Peterson one night, and he was going over the Egyptian myth, and as he was going through it, I'm like, oh, that's The Last Jedi. Like that's The Last Jedi. And that's episodes 2 and 3. And I mean, mechanically, I think Attack of the Clones is one of the worst movies I've ever seen, but I still have a real soft spot for what the movie is trying to do.
You know, it's really interesting. You don't hear in the fandom discourse, we tend to love kind of knocking on the Jedi Order. I think universally most all fans love to be like, oh, you know, the Jedi Order, maybe they weren't that great, because it's kind of a contrarian point that the prequels gives you on a silver platter that the Jedi Order was deeply flawed. Maybe they were the real bad guys of the galaxy.
I wouldn't
and
say that.
I've never really encountered like fans who are like, I'm just standoffish or angry about that, like being a failure.
let me put it this way. I walked out of the Phantom Menace for the first time, went home with my wife and my good friend who was living with me at the time. And we sat down, we talked about it, and we went through the whole thing. And we said, they're making, oh, this is a terrible thing. This is a mistake. Mm-hmm. Handing off Anakin to an untrained Jedi, effectively Padawan plus, like to a brand new knight. Now we're going to like, I mean, to be trained, like the Jedi Order made every bad decision they could. Now you could argue that that wasn't particularly that was written into the story and it had to be that way, but Lucas could have recast the story in a different way. Obi-Wan could have been older and, you know, a good mentor by that point, as opposed to Anakin being his first Padawan out of him being a Padawan himself, right? So he could have done things mechanically differently. He could have done all sorts of things differently. It doesn't matter. The arc of the story and what Lucas was trying to tell was obviously that classic story of institutional breakdown and then rebirth. Fast forward to the end of episode 6, and I look at, and I remember people complaining about this. And I said, well, does anybody really think that Han, Luke, and Leia were the right people to build a new institutional order? What's the first thing Leia wanted to do? Restore the old Republic, which had failed.
Yeah.
What did Luke want to do? Restore the Jedi Order, which had failed. And then there's Han. Was Han Solo going to grow up and be a great dad? I mean, is Leia going to grow up and be a great mom? She spent her whole life training to fight Palpatine and Darth Vader and to destroy an empire. This is not an unreasonable scenario where.
Yeah, so I think that's where I want to catch you, because like it is not unreasonable. I completely agree. Like fairy tales are not real. Fairy tales are not real. Marriages formed through infatuation and just through the chaos of war, like is the case of like Han and Leia, that doesn't have much of a basis once you get to the real world, peacetime, governance, and forming a family. But of all the things of this sequel trilogy that stung for me, I think it was actually the Han and Leia not being together, just like as a child of divorce thing. I was like, you know what? I need one fairy tale in my life. I need one fairy tale. And they couldn't even give you that. They couldn't give you the original cast all in the cockpit together. They couldn't give you Han and Leia. They couldn't give you Luke as a hero.
Yeah, but you know, the funny thing about it is that each one of these trilogies is a product of their time. Art is a product of the time in which it was produced. It's a reflection of the time that was produced. Star Wars was produced during the breakdown after the Vietnam War, during the ennui and the second American depression of the 20th century, because the 70s really, by any stretch of the imagination, were depression. And the story of America was already fading then. I mean, we had a bicentennial that was more of a dirge. I don't know if I was old enough to remember the bicentennial. It wasn't a great party. Right. As much as they tried to gin it up to be a great party, it really wasn't. Star Wars comes out a year later, and that's what actually cemented, like, in some ways, that America was something that was uniquely American that we could all rally around. And that was the first time since the middle of the Vietnam War that I think America really rallied around something that was positive. Because at that point, they're rallying around what, Studio 54, and you know.
And so we are in the dismantling of the myth moment. Right. Like, that's where we began.
And so now we move into the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
Where Lucas is now talking about the breakdown of our political system, which is absolutely underway. Bush v. Gore and the Y2K stock market crash. And then it's over by the time we get to the financial crisis. But all the seeds have already been sown. And Lucas was very clearly reflecting the political ennui of that era. I'll be honest with you. I think he only decided to make the prequel films because he could see a generational shift coming politically, because he's very in tune with that. His work has always been overtly political. People say, well, there's too much politics in Star Wars. I'm like, really?
Give me more.
Yeah. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Star Wars is one of the most political films I've ever seen. Yeah. And then you get to the sequel films, and the sequel films are absolutely about the period of chaos and breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a reflection of what's happening as the society is breaking. So the First Order has to be worse than the Empire, right? The Resistance has to be even less organized than the Rebellion, because everything has become that much
It's like the difference, like the First Order and the Empire, it's the difference between fighting Nazi Germany and fighting North Korea that will just like nuke things at random, right? It's a chaos state. It's a terror state rather than like a traditional world power in the 20th century. And I think all that's fine and good. But I want to cut to what you talk about, which is like not rationalizing why the prequel or the sequels were this way. Mm-hmm. But you do make a claim in your piece, where Star Wars meets the culture war, that part of this is vindictive. And this is kind of where I couldn't understand exactly where you land on this, because I think you and I agree, there are ways that you can rationalize and reason why the sequels are this way. But you say, and I believe very strongly, that they have been helped, and this is, the toxic subculture, like on YouTube, helped along by those very people intent on destroying all aspects, positive aspects of culture and community. Maybe it's a little too tinfoil hat for you, but how else do you account for the theatrical cut of Batman versus Superman? I'll give you that cut, and Joss Whedon's abortion of the Justice League is living proof. There's something willful at play here.
Oh, I agree.
So you're saying that there are leftist culture warriors actively trying to destroy the American myth, which makes it a little bit harder.
But I don't think that they're necessarily working at Lucasfilm. This is the divide. Mm. I think Kathleen Kennedy has been built up to be the big Sith Lord, when the reality here is that it's more Google, George Soros, and all these other people that I think are amplifying that. Yeah. And they're allowing these guys like Mike Zero and Thumcock and all these other people to just create division where division doesn't need to be. Because I've talked to plenty of people who are not, who are not complete Star Wars nerds. Now, every millennial man who is unmarried, doesn't have children that I've ever met, hates The Last Jedi with a purple passion. Yeah. Because Star Wars for them is their, it's a religion. And the sequel films, no one likes having their religion tarnished. No one or reevaluated, or no one I hate to put it this way. No one likes the New Testament. If you were a fan of the Old Testament, I don't want to it's the best way to put it. Or no one likes if you like the New Testament. Not trying to get overtly. I'm not having that discussion. But Star Wars for a lot of people has become a religion. There's no argument there, and so. You used the term headcanon before, and that's perfectly – that's another term for this. Because one thing I've noticed about humans is that if you say you're a-religious, everyone has a religion. You just don't believe in the one that's maybe dominant in the culture or whatever. People go out and find their own religions, be it Gaia or that Star Wars or, drumming or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Someone – you pick a thing, and that becomes the thing that gives you shape and focus and an ethos with which to live your life by. And I know a lot of libertarians choose that, go that route and become quasi-religious about their adherence to the non-aggression principle. I've been there. I know. So, I get it. And that's a perfectly valid, I'm not saying that that's wrong to be in that way, but at the same time, understand that not every movie and not every bit of Star Wars content is produced today for you.
Yeah, okay. And I think what you mentioned about like Kathleen Kennedy is sort of like filling the void as sort of like a Sith Lord here. I mean, it's just always kind of boggled my mind, given like the track record of this woman in the movie industry, working with Lucas, working with Spielberg, all the different projects that she's got her name on, to go, are you saying this lady is the cultural Marxist who wants to dismantle American capitalism and the idea of the hero's journey? I'm sorry, I just don't buy it. It also just ignores the successful movies that Disney has done. Like you look at Rogue One, The Force Awakens is a pretty decent start off to the franchise.
I think so.
Absolutely. The Mandalorian. And people go, oh, well, Kathleen Kennedy, surely she was responsible for The Last Jedi, but The Mandalorian, she must have been fighting it every step of the way.
Yeah, no, they're actually playing that game.
It's absurd.
It is absurd. And I'll tell you something else. I ran this one by, again, I have one of my patrons and regular listeners who I spar with on this all the time. I said, so I'm going to put this in your pipe and let you smoke this one. Kathleen Kennedy saw the rough cut of Rogue One and it was terrible.
Yes.
And she immediately fired Gareth Edwards, mm-hmm. pulled to George Lucas and fired Gareth Edwards as Lucas fired Richard Marquand, but refused to state so politically and publicly so that they could save face. Marquand's name is still on Return of the Jedi.
They fired the solo directors too.
Yeah.
Because it was too irreverent.
Right. Yeah. So she had Tony Gilroy come in and rewrite a Rogue One and into a much more classic hero cycle. Because she understood, she's like, this isn't Star Wars. This will not fly. And she did the same thing with Solo. And I'll be honest with you, she did the same thing with Rise of Skywalker when she fired Colin Trevorrow after reading his script. Hmm. And because his script, and she, who did she hire? She hired Chris Terrio. Now that's the guy that wrote, if you're a fan of it, Batman v Superman and Zack Snyder's Justice League, which are two of the most Christian freaking movies I've seen in the last, like, biggest Christian myths. And then Rise of Skywalker is I'm not denominationally Christian or anything else anymore, but these are like classic Christian myths. All three of these films, all written by the same guy. Why would you fire the obnoxious limey, Colin Trevorrow, and hire Chris Terrio if you didn't think that he was going in the wrong direction for Star Wars? And I think it's very, very clear that that Trevorrow took the lessons from The Last Jedi, went in the exact wrong direction, saw things, and was effectively, I think he was just upset that Finn wasn't the focus of the story and wanted to bring it back to Finn being the focus of the story, which makes no sense to me. It was always Rey's story, because at this moment in time, the problem in our society today, and this is something that this part of the Star Wars fandom, this young male, a disaffected young male that exists like almost exclusively on YouTube, doesn't understand, which is that the animus possessed female in Jungian terms, who is Rey, she is the problem. She is not being built up to be a Mary Sue. She's actually a problem. If you look at her animus possession, her masculine possession, she's completely sexless up until like the end of Luke's first lesson in The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. Like that's her sexual awakening as a character. She's completely sexless, which she had to be. She had to live an ascetic's life in the desert and just survive. And she pushed every other aspect of her life out of her personality down. And then that is actually what starts to awaken her. She has no idea how to deal with it. She accesses the dark side to beat Kylo Ren at the end of the first movie, calling him a monster and this, all of these terrible things. She accesses nothing but her hatred. And that doesn't make her a Mary Sue. That makes her putting her on the path to Anakin. Okay? At this time when there's no structure at all to even contain her. And you have Kylo Ren, who's a classic boy who was never given any boundaries. And you have the two of them trying to figure out what their roles are supposed to be in this world that's completely upside down. There's no structure in place here. The New Republic wasn't good enough, and the First Order is insane. So what are these two immensely powerful kids supposed to do? Well, this is the story of the sequel films as it plays itself out, is the restoring of proper gender roles in the Star Wars films. In Jungian terms, the animus-possessed female always and invariably will trigger.
Can you define that, the animus-possessed?
Okay. Animus versus everybody's made up of both their masculine and their feminine side in Jungian terms, yeah. Right? It's not, mm-hmm. not particularly difficult. And women and third wave modern cultural feminists are absolutely animus-possessed females. They don't want to just suppress men. They want to become men in order to take their power. That's feminist dogma, right? That's what they're all. That's why all these guys are complaining, saying that that's what Kathleen Kennedy is. And she may even be that person, but she's not that person because she's still creative enough to know that that's not going to fly as a Star Wars story. So we set up Rey as that kind of character. That's all throughout the first act of The Force Awakens. So she yells at Finn not to take her hand and what are you doing and all this stuff, right? So it's all that stuff. And it's kind of cool and it's fun and it's cute and everything.
Well,
and
it's like no different than Leia on the Death Star and the way that she reacts to being
Han Solo and all the rest of it, right? So it's very similar. But that will trigger the malformed man who is anima possessed, who is living in a culture where they've been defined by overbearing feminine archetypes. And in this scenario, the world we live in today, we absolutely are living in that kind of, in what Jonathan Pageau calls the inversion, right? Yeah.
Where every single movie that comes out, we're supposed to go, oh, way a strong and independent female character who needs.
Like, no, she's a dude with boobs, like Ripley from the Alien series. Every James Cameron heroine is just a dude with boobs, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not really interesting. Ray starts that way, and it looks like that's the path she's going to go, but truly, over the course of the three films, she doesn't go there. She goes completely opposite direction until Cristerio comes in and goes, no, you're a healer, you're a protector. She ends up with a yellow lightsaber. That means she's a guardian. Not that I'm a huge fan of all that. The
Sentinels,
right. The Sentinel, not a warrior, right? So
that's a really keen observation. I didn't really pick up on the meaning of that.
Mm.
I like that.
No, I can't take credit for it. A friend of mine picked it up and went, of course she's a guardian.
The Jedi guardians are the only ones with yellow lightsabers.
With yellow lightsabers, right. Mm. And so there's that. And it's just the whole thing is actually, if you were to sit down, strip away all of your anger and all of your fear and all the things that those stories freaking warn us about. These guys are reacting out of fear to their Star Wars being ruined when actually.
Yeah. And I think that this is what I based a lot of my book, How the Force Can Fix the World, on, is that we are drinking from the fountain of fear leading to anger, anger leading to hate leading to suffering. And we're absolutely doing it in the fandom, particularly on the right, in ways that, like, we say Star Wars is like a religion to us. We say it is incredibly valuable to us, but we don't want to actually live in its principles, practice a little bit of stoicism, a little bit of detachment away from this thing that we view as so precious, and it has to only be one certain way. I mean, what you just described about Rey, I have never heard that articulated before in my life as a fan, that she was actually like subjugated into gender roles by the end of the franchise. And
to think it through,
the thought really never passed my mind.
But it's fine. I would only have gone through this. My wife has been going through has been working with a Jungian. So when I was watching her go through her career, we spent a lot of time. We've done a whole like series of analyses on the Zack Snyder, Justice League, Superman trilogy stuff. And you can see all that stuff in there as well. I mean, look, how about the midpoint turn of the Rise of Skywalker? Let's take that, right? We have them on the remains of what's left of the old institutional order, the remains of the Death Star, fighting it out. Primal masculinity, toxic masculinity versus primal toxic femininity, right? And the gender roles are kind of reversed because he's an anima-possessed male. She's an animus-possessed female. They don't know what the hell they're doing. And they're surrounded by what? Primal chaos, water. Water is a classic archetypal, the classic archetype is water. Okay, they are surrounded by chaos. They are being drenched in chaos, back and forth.
By chaos and lobsters.
No, seriously. I mean,
no, you're right.
We don't watch these movies with our censoring conscience. We do not watch movies with our left brain. That's all chattering nonsense. And all the 99% of the commentary and the complaints you hear about The Last Jedi or Batman v Superman, Batman doesn't kill, and this, that, and everything else. When you hear that, that's all people getting up, having gotten triggered and then shutting off and then just making up jargon in order to justify why they were angry. And it's not why they're unwilling to accept what it is that actually bothered them, because it's actually uncovering deep emotional pain that they are having. I did this at times. I've done this at times. I mean,
may I posit what I think that pain is?
Sure.
I think, and this is not true, and I'm going to get dragged by a couple of people for saying this. This is not true of all guys on YouTube,
right?
But there is a rash of single childless men hanging out on YouTube, just yelling at each other about comic books. And my purest belief as a Star Wars fan, as a conservative with a lot of libertarian tendencies, is that the only thing that gives us value, direction, purpose, and calm in our sense of life and living is children. And if you are holding on to Star Wars as being yours and not about your youngling, you're going to be unhappy. You're going to be miserable. You're going to be vengeful. And every day you're going to wake up, turn on Disney Plus and go, why isn't this the way that I want it to be? Because it's not about you.
Worse than that, I have heard so much commentary about how The Bad Batch isn't good enough because every episode isn't life transformative. This is a classic example. This is exactly what I'm talking about. What you just said, this is to make your point, which is that we are talking about people who do not have any purpose or meaning in their lives. And because of this, all they're doing is, you know, as Kevin Smith put it in the Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back, what the hell is the internet? Oh, the internet is a place for people to watch porn and bitch about movies. Right. That was the line coming out of Ben Affleck's mouth, which was hilarious when you really stop to think about that. Right. This is the problem. I remember, I'll give you a perfect example. I have a very good friend of mine who I adore and is a good man, but is also one of these guys. And I remember telling him about my experience watching The Hunger Games for the first time. And I said, dude, I'm watching The Hunger Games and I'm a dad. And my daughter's like 9 or 10 at the time. And I'm watching The Hunger Games for the first time. And I'm like, I'm literally like clutching a pillow and horrified by what's going on here because I'm like, that could be my daughter. And he was like, oh my God, I never thought about that. I was just watching it from like a structuralist, you know, oh, it's just a hero cycle thing. I'm like, dude, yeah. this is the essence of why these stories have weight and meaning. This is why we react to them the way we do. This is why Star Wars is so important. And this is why, by the way, the Marvel movies all, at the end of the day, kind of.
None of these stories work without a generational sense of perspective and passing down what you have learned. Yes. That's what Star Wars is all about.
Star Wars is superior in every way to the Marvel
that
film.
Precipitating tweet, you know, J.D. Vance and the texts being burned. The texts weren't burned.
Aside from the fact that texts weren't burned.
I know, it's like.
But the texts were written 7,000 years ago to help contain the chaos of that era, or whatever, however many years ago. I don't know the canon that well to know, you know, the lore that well to know how long ago they were written, but that way they were written for that time. It's obvious that Rey is learning from them in order to try and write a new version of the Jedi text. Luke wasn't wrong when he said the Jedi need to end, but it's not that the Jedi are all wrong. It's that what was Jedi 1.0 wasn't good enough. We need Jedi 2.0. And this is the classic story. And this is the classic archetypal story about institutions and failures and, you know, and all of it. And we just have to, and that's what Star Wars has always been about.
And the rub, I think
the sequel films do a wonderful job of updating that.
But just to bring us home here, because I think everything that you have laid out here is of incredible importance. You have an incredible sense of empathy for the people, I think, on both sides, but particularly the angry reactionary right side of this debate, because you see the problems, you see the social dysfunction and sort of the vindictiveness they're dealing with. Because like what you're talking about people who are rudderless, aimless, are lacking purpose, you know, the same people who sort of make these movies and are active on Twitter, they want them to feel that way. They literally will just tell them like, yeah, we want you to like hate your life and be miserable and get out of the way for new people to get in front of you. And I want to know from you, like, what is the solution here? Like, how do you actually turn down the temperature and help to heal some of this divide? How can the Force maybe help fix the world from your approximation?
Well, the first thing to do is to really do the work on yourself, right? I mean, all I can tell you is that, you know, I used to be that guy before I had children, and you know, I got married young, but my wife and I didn't have children for a long
time. Yeah, me too.
And you know, the truth of the matter is that this is just going to have to come from inside, and it's going to have to. You're going to have to be willing to admit that you're not getting it done. And what I would say is, look, man, get healthy, get strong, get smart, and do the hard work, and then be willing to also
clean your room.
Clean your room. Stand up straight, shoulders back. You know, head held high, do the thing. Like, let's get it done, right? It's not hard. It's just what has to be done. And it is hard. It's not hard to articulate, but it's hard to do. And there are plenty of people out there who are willing to give you that help if you're willing to take the first step, as always. And that's what these films are actually about. These films are telling you, go out, find purpose, find meaning, if necessary, if that means have children, great. If it means join a monastery, if it means do something, means join a church, whatever it is, I don't know. But what I know that Star Wars gave me something beautiful and brilliant when I was 9-10 years old. But Star Wars also left me when I was, 14-15 years old.
Yeah.
And then there was no Star Wars for a long time until the role playing
from 16 to 21.
Right. But until the role playing game came out when I was in college and we could make our own Star Wars stories, there was no Star Wars. So we sat there for 15 years wondering just how cool Leia's mom was going to be, because this woman had to be like the most amazing thing imaginable in order to shelter the child and to get this thing done. And da, 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 da. And then it turns out to be Padme. And we're like, really? womp, womp. And so I have to console myself with a great Obi-Wan.
You thunder against me. You have done that yourself. You will not take it from me.
Tom, this has been incredibly a joyful and hard conversation to have. Thank you for sharing your love of Star Wars, your love of people, and wanting to try to heal so much of what is broken in this country through your writing and your commentary. Tom Longo, I will put a link to the piece in the YouTube channel so that people can go check it out. Thank you for doing this. I hope we can do this again, because I feel
whenever
like we could go several layers deeper on a couple of these points.
Whenever you want, Stephen, just whenever we can get the time to do it, I'll be happy to pop on for half an hour, an hour, whatever you want to do. I love
that. We will. Tom, may the force be with you. All right. That's it for today's or this week's video. My name's Stephen Kent. You can check out my book, How the Force Can Fix the World, Lessons on Life, Liberty, and Happiness. It comes out on October 26th. There's a link down in the video here that you can check out to go ahead and pre-order that book. Grab yourself a copy. This is a book exploring how the virtues of humility, empathy, courage, free will, balance, how these things can help restore so much of what is broken, not only in our politics, but in our personal lives. Because to fix our politics, to fix the world, you've got to fix some of what is going on with you first. Clean your room, stand up straight, chin up high. Thanks for everyone watching. And you can find me on Twitter at Stephen_Kent89. We'll see you next time.